Order. Melissa, please call the roll.
Chair Roberson.
Here.
Representatives Campbell.
Here.
Diaz. Gonzalez. Nelson.
Here.
Patronis.
Here.
Rader. Rollerson.
Here.
Rodriguez. Rooney. Saunders.
Here.
Spano.
Here.
Watson. Here. A quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Melissa. And as we begin the meeting today, I'd like to remind everybody to please turn off your cell phone or make sure it's silenced. Remember that anyone who appears before the committee, they must fill out an appearance card. All right, let's get started today. We have the following bills for consideration before the committee. We're going to be hearing House Bill 511, Cancer Control and Research, by Speaker Pro Tem Coley. House Bill 457, a Public Records Exception Bill on Dental Workforce Survey, by Representative Harrell. House Bill 591 on Newborn Screening, by Representative Harrell. And House Bill 419, a Public Records Exemption Records Bill from the Department of Health, on Department of Health Personnel, by Representative Renewart. And the last bill we're going to be hearing is House Bill 491, regarding Infectious Disease Elimination Pilot Program, by Representative Pafford. The first bill for consideration today is House Bill 511 by Speaker Coley. Madam Speaker, you're recognized to present your bill.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, members. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to present this bill. Members, in 1979, the legislature created the Florida Cancer Control and Research Advisory Council, also known as CCRAB. The purpose of CCRAB was for them to advise the legislature, the governor, and the Surgeon General on how to reduce the cancer burden in Florida. It exists in Florida statute, and it is housed or overseen at Moffitt, which is also in statute. The council monitors cancer trends and disparities and also evaluates and promotes effective interventions to help in cancer prevention, screening, and treatment. Additionally, the council develops position papers on cancer-related legislation and state policy issues. We have four goal committees. One is to develop system capacity, one is for prevention, one is for treatment and access to care, and one is survivorship. This bill actually is something that I have worked on off and on for the last couple of years. When Senator Marco Rubio was the Speaker of the House, he appointed me as to be a member of the board as a representative of the Florida House. There is always one House member and one senator that will sit on the board. One of the difficulties that we have faced is that it is a 35-member board, which is very difficult, first of all, to get a quorum. Secondly, it is also very difficult to get the positions appointed. The governor's appointment office is tasked with making many appointments and helping the governor make selections. So it is a very time-consuming process, apparently, because many of the positions go unappointed, or the member that has been appointed, the term will expire, but no reappointment or appointment is made, and so that person really will just continue serving out of the his or her strong interest. It does several things. It narrows the board from 35 to 15. It revises members based on the relevancy to cancer research and policy. No one being taken off is taken off for any bad reason. It is simply that we had to narrow it down from 35 to 15. These meetings are completely open to the public. Anyone can attend and have input. They simply would not be voting at the end. There are three new members related to cancer: a pediatric oncologist, a cancer researcher, and a patient who has survived cancer or a caregiver. The organization CEO now appoints members rather than the governor, and the speaker and the Senate president will also appoint. Moffitt is not, they have never been appropriated any funds, So we've moved the reimbursement for travel to the organizations independently. So a House member would then be reimbursed by the House and so forth. If a person is not a member of organization, then Moffitt would cover the cost. There are, I guess you've been given the list of who and who's been taken off and who is not. And up until last week, I had not really heard from anyone who was concerned. We did hear a couple of concerns last week, and I'm trying to work with them individually. It is not a negative thing to be taken off. It is simply saying 35 is too large. Let's reduce it to a more manageable number, 15, making sure that everyone on the board is specifically related to cancer. And there's a lot more information I could give you, but, Mr. Chair, that is the bill.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And I believe you have one technical amendment. Would you explain that amendment, please?
It simply adds, and I don't have the amendment in front of me. I apologize. It simply adds the word of, and I apologize because I don't have it in front of me and I can't tell you what line, but it adds the word of.
It's line 82.
Okay.
And it adds the of to the American Association of Community Cancer Centers.
It was just a technical typo that the word of was.
All right. Any questions on the amendment? Representative Watson, on the amendment? Okay. We're just on the amendment. Okay. Any public testimony on the amendment? Any debate on the amendment? Speaker Coley, having waived close on her amendment, we're now back on the bill.
Thank you.
Okay. Show the amendment adopted without objection. Okay, back on the bill. Members, a question on the bill. Representative Watson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Reading here a new provision that would remove the ban of members to participate in discussion and decisions on grants in organizations they're affiliated with. And I think that certainly leaves room for impropriety. I'm certainly curious as to why that would be removed for the ban from members on the board having an opportunity to be affiliated with organization in discussion and decisions on grants that will benefit the organization that they are affiliated with.
Yeah, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And the BRAC is the one that awards the grants and goes through the grants. There's a very stringent process for grants to be awarded, especially through the Bankhead Coley and James and Esther King. It is important that these organizations not be involved in awarding those grants. So really, CCRAB has no grant awarding authority at all.
Any follow-up, Representative? Okay. All right, thank you. I believe Representative Petronas, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Coley, I'm following your logic that smaller is better, more effective, efficient government decision-making. I'm just curious if you would accept a friendly amendment to apply that same methodology to the Florida House of Representatives.
Mr. Chair? Absolutely.
Okay. Members, any other questions? Okay. All right. Thank you. Any public testimony? We have Brian Pitts, Justice for Jesus. Justice to Jesus. You're recognized.
Thank you very much, Brian Pitts, Justice to Jesus. I heard the sponsor. What's the real reason? Because you can't get schedules kind of together and you can't get appointments. But that's usual in government. You have to work your way through, make calls, play phone tag, make sure everybody get in line. Okay, how did you come up with 15, 35, 50, why not 20? Why not 22? How did you get from 35 to 15? How did that number come up? It was, since 1979? This is 2014. So it kind of ain't been a problem for several years until all of a sudden immediately now we need to change it to 15, not 30, not 20. And how we come up with the number? Now, it also says it's getting rid of the Cancer Fund. Any intent, that was. Okay, so where's that new fund going to go? Again, we're talking about cancer. Until we find a solution, every state need to be dealing with this. The stakeholders that are being removed. That's why it's at large, because it's a big issue. So 15 that have been arbitrarily picked, because it wasn't stressed really why they were picked from the 35. Back when the 35 was picked, when this body made the wisdom, they picked that category from those particular trades. Now narrow down to the 15, where's the body's wisdom of to now how only these 15 isolated to them, they need to be the only ones. Phone tag, and just because schedules don't come up with one another, that happens in many councils and committees all the time throughout the state, especially in administrative and executive offices. Appointments with the governor and appointments from both of these institutions and this body, that happens a lot. You have to get on the phone, you have to get through with the members, say, look, you need this appointment, okay? What's the difference with this? Especially as important as it is. I don't see the logic, okay, the one member say, you know, smaller is better. Well, no, not necessarily, depending on the issue you're dealing with and the stakeholders involved. So, on this one, no, it's not. What's the real reason? Okay, not only that, the one member thing. Look at the powers, duties, and what else? Yeah, the powers, duties, and the members. She mentioned the members being changed, but also you got duties and powers being changed, too. So now, lesser, it won't be with the whole carte blanche was before. So she can talk about how many powers and duties are being removed from this particular entity as well for the research of cancer in the state, as important as it is. I can't follow her logic on it, but okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Pitts, for your testimony. Anyone else wishing to give testimony before the committee? Okay, members, we're in debate. Any debate on the bill? Any debate? Okay, Speaker Coley, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and again, thank you, members, for hearing this good bill. This has been a problem for many years. Yes, it was created in 1979 with 35 members, and over the years, the appointments have been very difficult to accomplish. I can remember my first year where that actually took up quite a bit of time in the committee meetings, where we got to figure out how to get the governor to go ahead and make these appointments so we can have all the members, so we can have a quorum, we can get things done. So that has been very, very difficult. And narrowing the membership to those that are specifically related to cancer research and cancer care is of utmost importance. I agree with Mr. Pitts. Cancer research is incredibly important. The funding portion of this board, this council, has actually never occurred. The funding was not appropriated. They did not appropriate. There are other funding mechanisms. Now, I can't explain to you why that never occurred, but it did not. I agree that it should not go through that council because there would be too many conflicts of interest. The funding going through peer review, where it is completely taken out of the political arena, where none of us or none of the organizations that would receive it get to choose, seems logical to me. Peer review from outside to look at grant monies available, the grants, the research that is being done, that's a completely separate thing. This is simply looking at the cancer plan, the cancer research. We work closely with BRAC. And I don't think that we're trying to take away any power or add to. We simply want to make it more efficient. And with that, I would ask for your favorable support. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Speaker Coley, having closed on her bill, Melissa, please call the roll on House Bill 511 and announce the vote.
Representatives Campbell?
Yes.
Diaz? Gonzalez?
Yes.
Nelson?
Yes.
Patronus?
Yes.
Rader?
Yes.
Rollerson?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Rooney? Saunders?
Yes.
Spano?
Yes.
Watson?
Yes.
Chair Robertson?
Yes.
The bill passes.
show the bill reported favorably.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members.
Okay, next bill we have for consideration is House Bill 457, a public records exemption bill on dental workforce surveys by Representative Harrell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this is a very simple bill. It's a public records exemption for dentists and dental hygienists for their personal identifying information when they complete the voluntary survey that's part of their licensure process every 2 years. This is following in accord with the public records exemption that we have for physicians when they do complete a similar type survey. That is the bill.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Harrell. We don't have any amendments. Members, any questions? Any questions? Representative Rodriguez for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is probably a standard question, but do you know if the First Amendment Foundation has a position on this bill?
You're recognized.
Thank you very much. No, I do not. They have not contacted me. I do not know.
Okay. Any other questions, members? Okay. Any public testimony? Okay, we have, first up, we have Tom Reinhart with the Florida Dental Association.
He
waves in support. Thank you. Dr. Gerald Byrd with the Florida Dental Association. Waves in support. Thank you. Brian Pitts.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much. Ron Pitts, Justice Diesel, on this particular measure. You know, this one came up about three or two sessions now, this bill, that's been around. And obviously it's problematic, because it is. Remember, this is exemption, so it must be necessary. You don't do this lightly. And the first thing, that's what I like about staff, because see, staff send me time when they got their facts in line. So on page 2 of the staff analysis, when it talks about the survey, it says they already getting an 89% response. So that means they're only missing 11, so apparently there's nothing really that troublesome to the petitioners. They just need to get the additional 11% and they'll have all the surveys. It says they're 89% response. Okay, so what's the concern? What are they having for the survey? But this did bring up something that's very interesting, and I hope this is kind of wrong. On page 5, it talks about DOH may not have the authority even to do surveys, and that you may want to look into that. I find this very, very interesting. Okay, that's another problem, because here's the point. If they don't have authority to do it, you don't need an exemption. Okay, since it's voluntary, what's the need for the exemption? Now, staff in the analysis is saying that is not required. And then on footnote 6, it mentions other professions where the survey is required for licensure. Staff says, in the case of dentists, it is not. So again, what do you need exemption for unless it's mandatory for dentists to do so? But you know what? That's irrelevant. They get an 89% response. Work on the other 11%. After that, if you think you remit necessity, we don't have it here. Staff telling you. So I thank you very much. But again, the third and fourth session here, this bill, it's not solving the problem. Everything's all right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pitts. Anyone else in the audience wants you to give testimony on the bill? Okay, seeing none, we're in debate. Members, any debate on the bill? Hey, seeing that no one wishes to debate, Representative Harrell, would you like to close on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I would. Although the survey is not required, there is a high participation rate, and I truly believe that is because the dentists do want the state to have this necessary information in order to do appropriate planning. However, this is very personal, confidential information. It contains various things like how long are you going to practice, what are your plans, a really proprietary information that is not appropriate for to be out there in the public. I think a public records exemption is in the best interest of the state of Florida in order to really be able to plan appropriately
yes, dentists are participating. Thank you, the dentists. But they also would very much like to have that proprietary personal information kept confidential. And I think they have the right, and it's in the best interest of the state to do that. And with that, I would ask for your favorable vote.
Thank you. Melissa, please call the roll on House Bill 457 and announce the vote.
Representatives Campbell?
Yes.
Diaz? Gonzalez?
Yes.
Nelson?
Yes.
Patronus?
Yes.
Rader?
Yes.
Rollerson?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Rooney? Saunders?
Yes.
Spano?
Yes.
Watson?
Yes.
Chair Robertson?
Yes.
The bill passes.
Show the bill reported favorably. Okay, Representative Harrell, if you would just stay right up there, the next bill we're going to hear is House Bill 591, and you're recognized to present your bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And House Bill 591 deals with the newborn screening program. And this is a highly successful program that identifies genetic disorders and assures that the early management and follow-up of these disorders in newborns is taken care of. It's very important to those new infants that they are screened and that the parents are informed and that they can then get appropriate treatment. This is kind of a cleanup bill. It makes some changes that align it with the status of industry standards. It identifies primary care physician. It changes that to healthcare practitioner to make sure that all those who touch that child, who have the ability to intervene and help that child should they have some kind of a disorder, would have the results readily handy, such as nurse practitioners, audiologists, a variety of specialists, of individuals, practitioners who do need that information. It also amends the hearing impairment statute to decrease the impairment from 30 decibels to 16 decibels. This is now the new industry standard and the identifiable number that is being used. It also makes deletes some obsolete dates within the statute. That is the bill.
Thank you, Representative Harrell. Members, any questions on the bill? Any questions? Okay. Seeing no questions, we'll go into public testimony, and we have two that wish to give public testimony. First, we have Brian Wendell with the Florida Department of Health. Thank you. Department of Health waves in support. Next, we have Brian Pitts.
Thank you very much. What's the need? Okay, right now in law, primary care physician it goes to. That's it. Okay, now, what's wrong with that? Because most cases, the directions is going to go to the other ones that's mentioned in the laundry list of all the others that are mentioned here. Primary care, that's the one, yeah, who would need to have it. And then he would direct those in the lower echelon that work under him or direct them what to do with it. Okay, so why do he and the others need it? Kind of all, if they're working together, I don't get the reason for the extension. You know, HIPAA is for a reason, whether it's outside or inside the profession concerning the patient, in this case including the child. We know they're going to be touching the child, but the major care physician will be there somewhere, or know, or be on the clip, or somewhere instructions will be so they know, okay, or do they really need access to it, depending on what their powers and duties are with that particular child. This analysis or report? Probably not. Why? Because when this body made it, they could have thought about those to give it to, and they left it at primary physician. What today has changed that this institution should change that? In other words, here's the point. Don't give a practitioner the materials unless it's part of their powers and duties that they really, really need it. Just because all of them are caring for this particular patient don't mean all of them need to have the vital information, but the primary care physician definitely needs to, because he instructs the others. So here's the next thing. If they send this out, okay, are they going to send out different reports? Are they all going to request it as they feel from the agency? So now the primary care physician, then the physician assistant may request it. And then we go down the whole line, all those involved child will all request it, and now they're producing several copies of it, whether electronically or by paper, to all these different persons.
Well, then again, I can understand why I own you to the primary care physician, because we can deal with the issues of giving out copies or sending out different copies. Everybody's, the ducks is in line. It is only sent to one person, the primary care. He then or she then can send it down to the rest. So, you know, I don't get this. You can open up a serious problem, especially with requests. You need to put in there limit who can request it at some point. You don't even do that. So say, what if all of them just go ahead and request it whenever they meet this child, wherever they meet them?
I don't know about that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Pitts. Okay. Anyone else in the audience wishing to debate? I mean, give public testimony?
Okay.
All right. We're seeing none. We're in debate. Members, any debate on the bill? Okay, Representative Harrell, seeing no debate, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I can assure you, members, that HIPAA does apply to each and every one of these practitioners that we have now enabled to have the information from the screening. HIPAA is very important. Personal private health information must be protected, and HIPAA does cover this. The reason these individuals are enabled under this legislation to have access to this information is because they are the ones who will be treating the patient, the audiologist for hearing impairments. Frequently, a nurse practitioner will be treating the patient. All the ancillary healthcare practitioners that touch this child should have accurate information. They are part of the process, and as we move forward, they will need this information to take care of the child. So I think this is a very important bill, especially for our newborns who will and be identified under it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Farrell. Melissa, please call the roll on House Bill 591 and announce the vote.
Representatives Campbell?
Yes.
Diaz?
Yes.
Gonzalez?
Yes.
Nelson?
Yes.
Patronus?
Yes.
Rader?
Yes.
Rollerson?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Rooney?
Yes.
Saunders?
Yes.
Spano?
Yes.
Watson?
Yes.
Chair Robertson?
Yes.
The bill passes. Thank you.
Show the bill reported favorably. Okay. The next bill for consideration today is House Bill 519 by Representative Renewart. Representative Renewart, you're recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, but that was House Bill 419. But,
Excuse me, 419.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, you know, we would like to think that every healthcare professional performs legally and ethically. We'd also like to think that every disability case is legitimate and that taxpayers' monies are never misused. Well, unfortunately, that's not the case in either situation. The Department of Health has teams of investigators, inspectors, caseworkers, and adjudicators who investigate complaints filed against those licensed under their department and Social Security disability claims. Investigators have received specific threats, some of which have been life-threatening, and some of these threats were sent to the personnel's individual private residence. House Bill 419 would amend public record exemption statutes to include personal information such as home addresses, phone numbers, date of birth, and photos of certain Department of Health personnel and their families. Last year, a similar bill passed this committee. It passed through the Senate. It passed through the House on second reading, but it was never brought up for third reading because it needed a two-thirds vote. The First Amendment Society is neutral on this bill, and there is an amendment.
Okay, let's go ahead. No, you're recognized to explain your amendment.
All right. This amendment adds the date of birth to one of the identifying piece of information that would be exempt from public records, and this makes the House bill same as it is in the Senate bill to conform it to the other exemptions currently in statute. This amendment also fixes some technical issues with the language.
Okay, members, any questions on the amendment? We're on the amendment. Okay, Representative Rader, on the question on the amendment.
Yes.
Okay, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You said this bill got to the floor last year. Was this amendment with it, or was it just recently added, and if so, why?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Yeah, the date of birth was something that was not included last year. But other departments, such as the Department of, I think, Professional Regulation, I think they include that there are a couple of different public records exemptions. And because the date of birth particularly for family members and children of these investigators. It kind of protects their age and maybe what schools that they attend.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. Seeing none, we're in public testimony on the amendment. Anybody wishing to give public testimony on the amendment? Okay. Seeing none, we're in debate on the amendment. Any debate on the amendment? Seeing none, Representative Renouard waives close on his amendment. And now we're back on the show the amendment adopted without objection. Representative Renouard, we're back on the bill. Members, any questions on the bill? Okay. Seeing none, we're in public testimony, and we have a couple. Paul Runk, Department of Health.
Department of Ways and Support.
Department of Health, Ways and Support. Brian Pitts.
Wave report.
Hey. Brian Pitts, Ways and Support. Congratulations, Representative Renouard.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Now we're in debate. Members, any debate? Okay. Seeing none, would you like to waive your close?
Waive my close.
Hey, okay. All right. Representative Renouard, having waived close on his bill, Melissa, please call the roll on House Bill 419 and announce the vote.
Representatives Campbell.
Yes.
Diaz.
Yes.
Gonzalez.
Yes.
Nelson.
Yes.
Patronus.
Yes.
Rader.
Yes.
Rollerson.
Yes.
Rodriguez.
Yes.
Rooney.
Yes.
Saunders.
Yes.
Spano.
Yes.
Watson.
Yes.
Chair Robertson.
Yes.
The bill passes.
Show the bill reported favorably.
Thank you, Chair and members.
Okay. The next bill we have up for consideration this morning is House Bill 491 by Representative Pafford. Representative Pafford, you're recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and again, it's great to be back before this committee on this particular bill. Last year, with the exception of Representative Patronus, this committee heard this bill and passed it out unanimously. So with that, Mr. Chair, there is a strike all that's accompanying this bill. If you'd like, I can speak to the strike all.
Yeah, let's go to the strike all, and then we'll go back to the bill.
Okay, great. The strike all basically makes some changes that put this bill in alignment with the Senate bill. It does a few things. It changes the title to the Miami-Dade Infectious Disease Elimination Act, and it also builds in some language that would permit the pilot program, which is what we're talking about for this particular needle and syringe program, to actually have its 5 years of existence. In the event there's a problem setting it up, could take 6 months, could take 12 months, it builds in that full 5 years. Generally speaking, the program is a pilot for Miami-Dade. It's 5 years, as I mentioned. The idea is to offer an exchange for needles that are used by drug users, abusers, and allow them to have clean needles, thus reducing the chances that communicable type of diseases like hepatitis C, HIV, et cetera, are spread in that local area. That's the idea of the strike all. That generally explains the larger bill, and I'm happy to answer questions.
Okay. Any? We're on the strike all amendment, then we'll come back to the bill. Any questions on the amendment? Okay. Seeing any public testimony on the amendment? They're all of on the bill. In the debate on the amendment? Okay, seeing none, show that amendment adopted without objection. And now we're back on the bill as amended. Members, any questions on the bill as amended? Representative Patronus, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Pafford, if I support this legislation, does that mean you support my only bill I got filed this year?
Mr. Chair, can I plead the fifth? I'll certainly give it great consideration, Representative Petronis. And if Mr. Chair, if I may, this is not my first bill, Mr. Petronis. Okay.
Follow up, sir?
You're recognized.
How about if I don't harass you, will you at least not harass me?
You're Mr. recognized.
Chair? Yeah, I can agree to that quite easily.
Okay. Representative Wallerson, you're recognized for a serious question.
Oh, well, then I can't plead the fifth. No. Representative Pafford, thank you very much for the bill and the presentation. I just have a couple of questions. You know, in thinking about this and looking at the program, the first concern I have is any program that is brought forward has an end date certain. Could you explain how this program has a five-year life, but at the end of that term, how is this program terminated?
Sure. Mr. Chair. Built into the language, it's a six-page bill, beginning on page 56 to about 126. That's the detail of the bill. Specifically, in terms of the five-year idea, lines 108 through 110 talk specifically to the length of the program. They build in the OPAGA timeline for them to put out their report, and then it ends. If I may also add, since there is no state funding at all with this program, it will end quite easily, probably.
Okay. You recognize for follow-up?
Thank you. That's good to hear. My concern about the bill and for me is, are we enabling anyone in this? And I know that you've had that concern as well. One of the things that I have heard in talking with the folks who have come to see me about this is that in the long term, they believe that this will save a lot of money in terms of health care costs that the state may incur down the road. One of the things in the staff analysis, it talks about the needles that are left out in the public and somehow injure people, and that such injuries are hepatitis B, C, and HIV. And I know that there's not any real statistics out there on how many people have actually incurred this, but it's your belief that this program could prevent that and could, in the long term, save the state some money in health care costs. Is that a fair analysis of this?
Mr. Chair?
You're right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, in fact, in the Senate analysis, there is actually mentioned that a 10% reduction in these type of injuries could result in $124 million savings. That's 10%. So it is sizable, and I'm happy to provide the Senate analysis. Perhaps that can be built in otherwise. The House analysis, by the way, was wonderful. Staff.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Representative Saunders, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm proud to co-sponsor this bill, Representative Pafford, as you know, but I was just wondering if you could speak for a minute so that the public knows about the one-to-one exchange and the language in the bill and the intent of the bill to use this as a mechanism to get people into both treatment for drug abuse and addiction, but also to give them more information about best practices in preventing transmittable diseases.
You recognize.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Saunders. Yeah, there's the health policy portion of the bill, which, you know, we're trying to reduce those infections, those types of diseases that really not only harm people and families and communities and budgets, but there's that education component. If you look at page 1, line 11, you'll note throughout the language that education is a major part of this, not only trying to get folks into programs, but also educating folks about the dangers and risks of this type of activity. So it's a very well thought out program, but nobody knows for certain what will happen, thus the pilot type of language, and thus the OPAGA report that will run, you know, in the same parallel with the end of the program, and hopefully give us some good data to find out if it's something that it was in fact worthy. I hope that answers your question, Representative.
Members, any other questions? Okay, seeing none, we'll move into public testimony. We have several who would like to give testimony on the bill. First, we have Phile Curva with the Bud Bill Clearinghouse Human Services. Okay. Next, we have Michelle Jacquez with the Florida Medical Association.
Florida Medical Association waves in support.
Thank you. Next, we have Hansel Tooks, a medical student, University of Miami. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I want to thank the entire committee for giving me a few minutes to talk to you and for your support of this bill last year. This is a very important issue to us. The pilot is necessary in Miami because a new National Institute of Drug Abuse report On the year 2013, it was highlighted in the Herald a few weeks ago. It said that a key issue that was identified was a heroin epidemic in South Florida, particularly in Miami. The number of heroin-related deaths have jumped by 120% in 2 years. So Miami is this city that's at an intersection of both a drug abuse and infectious disease epidemic. We have the highest rate of HIV in the entire country. We have over 10,000 injection drug users, and a fifth of them have HIV, a third of them have hepatitis C. Washington, D.C. just released their data on their syringe exchange program from 2007 to 2011, and they were able to decrease their rate of HIV infection in their drug users by 80%. So I want to tell you about a patient of mine at Jackson that was just discharged on Friday. She was an injection drug user, and she admitted to sharing needles with her boyfriend. When they were desperate, they told me that they picked up needles off of the street. So I published a study that I spoke to about last year where I told you about how I walked through the streets of Miami and counted the number of syringes on the street and found basically that Miami is covered with syringes. That was actually the study that inspired this bill. But I never imagined that drug users in desperation actually used those syringes that are found on the streets of Miami. So this patient was walking around. She had leg pain and back pain. And when she went to the emergency department, she was ultimately found to have an abscess in her lung that connected to her spine. She had to undergo neurosurgery, and she was hospitalized for over 2 months. During that time, she was tested for HIV and hepatitis C, and she was positive for both. So she's only 25 years old. So now she's been discharged from Jackson, and she has a lifelong battle with chronic medical conditions to deal with. Sadly, her story is all too common for us at Jackson Memorial Hospital. And I wanted to let you know that the cost for just her bed, I calculated it, just her bed, not her surgeries, could have funded this pilot for one whole year. So syringes cost less than a dollar, and this program will be funded by private nonprofits. It costs $380,000 to treat somebody for a lifetime of HIV, which is a bargain compared to hepatitis C. These patients rarely have private insurance, so these costs fall directly on Florida taxpayers through Medicaid and the Ryan White program, and other sources of public health care funding, like Jackson Memorial Hospital, our safety net in Miami. And as Representative Pafford said, the Senate analysis said that if we had prevented 10% of these infections, we would have saved the state $124 million. So just imagine that number in the context of the D.C. numbers where they decreased their rate of HIV by 80% in this population. So I want to thank you for your attention, and hopefully you will support this bill.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Okay, next we have Patricia Green for Florida Psychiatric Society, Ways and Support. Thank you. Stephen Nguyen, Executive Director, Florida Osteopathic Medical Association. Is here, he waves in support. Ave Ascenden, Florida State University medical student.
Mr. Chair, Ave Ascenden, first year medical student at Florida State University College of Medicine.
Thank you. Waves in support.
Pernos.
John Dudley, Florida State University medical student.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John Dudley, second year medical student at Florida State University College of Medicine.
Okay. Thank you. Waves of support. Isn't there any gators here waving in support? next, we have Chanel Diaz. Any relation? You're recognized.
I'm a third year medical student at the University of Miami.
Thank you for being here. Next, we have Jesse Fry with the Florida HIV AIDS Advocacy Network.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The 300 strong statewide membership of the Florida HIV AIDS Advocacy Network waves in support of this very good bill.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. And next we have Chris Fisher with the AIDS Institute.
Wave and support. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Waves and support. Okay, anyone else in the audience wants to give testimony? Seeing none, members, we're in debate. We're in the debate on the bill. Anyone wishing to debate the bill? Representative Vice Chair Rooney, we recognize and debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I said last year, I really view this as a safety issue, as well as, keeping the spread of disease controlled and those types of things. But with our EMTs, our firefighters, our police that have to deal with these folks and the needles and all that stuff, I think it's a great bill, and I'll support it again.
Anyone else wishing to debate? Representative Rawlison in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just briefly, I had my trepidations about giving out needles. I really have a problem with that. However, there is reality, and we have to deal with reality, and by our responsibility is to help those people who have come up with a non-cost, creative way of trying to deal with this aspect. And I will be keeping an eye on this in terms of some of the numbers that have been brought forward in terms of the cost savings and those sorts of things. But I think it's a creative way for people to try and deal with the problem that is reality that we have. So I applaud you on trying to do that, and I appreciate it. Thank you. I'll support the bill.
Members, anyone else wishing to debate? Okay. Representative Pafford, would you like to close on your bill?
And just to take a moment, I'd like to thank the chair and every member of this committee for having the ability to look at a piece of policy on its own merit. And as Representative Rawlerson said, I think there is a tendency to look at these type of bills and immediately go in one direction. But as I was talking to a small group this morning over breakfast, there is that reality. And I think as a body, we owe it to the people of Florida, in this particular case, Miami-Dade, to give a good effort in trying to make a situation that obviously, according to some of the testimony, it's getting worse right now and people are hurting and dying. I think there's cost savings, which we will continue to monitor. I'd like to thank everybody who spoke in support. And with that, I'd ask for your favorable support of this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Pafford. Melissa, please call the roll on House Bill 491 and announce the vote.
Representatives Campbell?
Yes.
Diaz?
Yes.
Gonzalez?
Yes.
Nelson?
Yes.
Patronus?
Yes.
Rader?
Yes.
Rawlerson?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Rooney?
Yes.
Saunders?
Yes.
Spano?
Yes.
Watson?
Yes.
Chair Robertson?
Yes.
The bill passes.
Okay, show the bill reported favorably. Congratulations. Okay, members, this concludes our committee agenda today. We had a good meeting. We passed out five bills, and thank you for your work and for your attention, and thank everyone in the audience who came to give public testimony. Representative Diaz moves that we rise. Unless there's an objection upon the motion of Representative Diaz, the meeting is adjourned.